This podcast is brought to you by Intrepid Travel, the global leaders in immersive, sustainable, small group travel experiences. Take yourself away from the world you know and be open, curious, fearless, and challenged. Be intrepid. Visit intrepidtravel.com to book your next trip today. Not so long ago, the world was your oyster. Now, though, the world is most definitely not your oyster. It's barely even your muscle. This wide and wonderful earth that used to hold such infinite possibility has shrunk in the last few months, to the point that many of us can no longer even leave our home countries. That could be seen as a bad thing, but it could also be seen as something very, very good. Because maybe we Australians needed a push to get out there and explore more of our own country. Maybe we needed an excuse to keep our feet on the ground and check out our own backyard, to appreciate our own culture and history, to support regional businesses and communities hit hard by virus and bushfire, to experience the true breadth of attractions that Australia has to offer, and that other people spend so much money coming to see. Travel right now means staying home, and that's an exciting prospect. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're taking stock of a shrunken world and looking at our options for travel at home. We're heading into the heart of Australia, checking out regional communities and isolated attractions that you might possibly have heard of, but have probably never visited. And we're explaining why now is the perfect time to do so. Joining me to discuss Australia's exciting and sometimes forgotten regions are two travellers who have seen the length and breadth of this great land. First, she's a writer for traveller.com.au who has fought in the great Fred Brophy's Outback boxing tent, Sue Williams. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks so much for coming along. Also joining us, she's Deputy National Editor of Traveller and someone who hankers after the cool, clean air of Devonport, Jane Reddy. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Great to have you guys along. Now, Sue, we're going to have to start with the Fred Brophy story. How did you wind up fighting in an Outback boxing tent?
Well, I was doing a travel book about the Australian outback, and I kind of thought, what would be the most exciting thing to do? So I phoned Fred Brophy and said, I'd love to come up and meet your fighters and come and watch a fight in the tent. And he said, yeah, fine. And then without actually realising that I'd said the words, I said, and actually, I'd quite like to have a fight as well. And he said, well, have you fought before? And I said, no. And he said, how old are you? And I told him. He said, no, you can't fight. You're far too old. And then, of course, that made me really determined to go up there and have a fight.
That's right.
So I spent a couple of weeks in Sydney learning how to box from various boxing gyms and then went up there, and I was the only woman to volunteer to fight. He had one kind of really quite beefy woman who was fighting called the Beaver, and I volunteered to fight her. And because nobody else had volunteered, he then had to let me fight. He was really reluctant because when he looked at me, he obviously thought that I wasn't going to be any good. And he was right. But I kind of put up a spirited defense, really. And I kind of really got into it. And all the crowd, there's 200 people packed into this boxing tent out the back of an outback pub in Queensland. And they're all shouting for me because I was the obvious underdog. I was so hopeless that I was really spurred on by all their encouragement and, got really bashed around quite a lot, really. But you get so excited by it, you kind of start thinking, this blood, is it coming from me? Maybe it's coming from her. And then you think, no, it's actually coming from me.
I haven't landed a punch yet.
No.
Do they give you good protective equipment? Are you wearing like a big helmet
nothing.
Type thing?
Or? No, the rules of outback boxing, you wear gloves, but you're not allowed any other protection. So that's why it's been outlawed in nearly every state, apart from the Northern Territory and Queensland.
Right.
So right at the very beginning, she landed a really big right into my face and I fell over. And I remember falling to the ground and everything went black. And I thought, fantastic, I've been knocked out. That's the end of this thing. I can leave and there'll be no shame. And then suddenly the next thing I knew, someone was helping me up from the ground and they'd just had a power cut in the tent and the lights had gone out. And so we started all over again. So it was horrific. It was a horrible experience, but it was a really interesting time. And wherever I went in the outback after that, I would casually throw in that I was a veteran fighter from Fred Brophy's, and people would treat me with such instant respect. So it kind of opened a lot of doors to me, all that pain.
Well, you've certainly got my respect. There's no doubt about that. Jane, I assume that you have a story similar to that as well from your experiences in regional Australia.
How do I back that one up, Sue? There's no coming back from that one.
You're obviously much more sensible than me.
But Jane, what do you think about regional Australia? You know, how does it compare to say the overseas travel experience? What have we got here that perhaps people don't appreciate?
Well, look, I was the youngest child of parents who loved the outback and loved to explore. So I was sat in the back of a blue Holden and travelled around the countryside, including spending a fair bit of time up in the Northern Territory and exploring South Australia. So the outback that I saw as a child was, you know, we were camping at the base of Uluru and spending time at the Alice Springs Telegraph Station, which, you know, as a child, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, but in fact, it does colour your view. But it was also the people, the characters in the Northern Territory in particular, a particularly special group.
So, Sue, what interests me, you know, you're not from Australia. You had your choice of the entire world of where to explore and you know, what to do. But obviously, you've been drawn quite strongly to regional Australia. What is it about it that has taken you there?
Well, I think it's just so different from anywhere else in the world. It's quite exceptional. There's nowhere else in the world like it. There's so many incredible characters, really warm and really welcoming usually. And there's so many wonderful sights. You know, you've got great mountains, you've got escarpments, you've got, you know, clear green crystal water pools filled with crocodiles. There's always danger at every turn, it seems. But I just find it quite amazing. And I think a lot of us, we all kind of live on the coast, and many of us don't actually go to the outback, but when we do, we're always surprised by how miraculous it is, and even how people manage to live in those really remote, isolated places. You kind of look at a place and you think, geez, how can anybody live here? But people live there and they're really passionate about their home, and they manage with, you know, only groceries being delivered once every 3 months. And to us city people, it just seems quite impossible, but those people wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I had people, yeah, when I was traveling around the outback, who would say to me, oh, how sad that you actually live in a city, and how awful you live in an apartment. It must be so terrible for you. And if you come here, maybe you could afford a house which is going to cost, you know, $70,000. And maybe you could just scrape together enough for a deposit. And they had no idea how much I loved living in cities, because to them, the outback was everything. And it's just wonderful to be able to dip your toe in that kind of world and have it so close to us. We're very, very lucky in that respect.
It's quite otherworldly, I think, coming from the southern states as well, in terms of the climate as well. There is something about cultures and people that live in the north that are genuinely, there's this sort of warm feeling, and as you say, we're a source of pity rather than for people, yeah, that come from the city. We're not it's the great leveler, isn't it, being in the outback?
As someone who grew up in Northern Australia, I think I can safely say this, that as well as the sort of warm, welcoming nature, there's also the gontropo side of things, where you meet some fairly quirky, sometimes fairly bonkers characters up there, don't you?
You certainly do. But, you know, it makes it a really colourful experience, and we're really lucky to be able to do that. And it's kind of nice to meet some of those characters, and some of them you don't really want to spend too much time with, really. But it's wonderful to be able to leave them behind.
Yeah, this is true. And Jane, of course, Australia is home to the oldest continuous living culture in the world, which is Aboriginal Indigenous culture. And that's something that we can experience as well in regional Australia fairly easily. I know you had a pretty incredible experience in a dot painting workshop in Uluru recently, which is so sort of, you know, unique and idiosyncratic to Australia.
Yes, indeed. It was last year when, you know, the climb of Uluru came to an end, and, you know, there was a lot of talk about that. But as an aside to this, I happened to be there on the weekend when some dot painting workshops are being held, and it was just incredible to actually spend some time with this artist who, through an interpreter, spoke Pinjara, and you know, we just spent just a few hours together chatting, and she was talking us through her, you know, the symbols, drawing symbols in the sand, talking about the language, and then we actually had a chance to do a dot painting workshop afterward. And, you know, my efforts could be best described as unsophisticated. But we spent a fair bit of time talking about and sort of trying to represent symbols ourselves of family and home and pathways. And, you know, it created this incredible sort of pause for thought, I suppose, for me about what those things mean to me. Recently I was in America and we did some hiking around some ancient caves and discovering some Pueblan culture. And it was fascinating because these artifacts were, you know, relatively young compared to our Indigenous culture that we've got in our own backyard. And again, it's one of those pause for thoughts about what we have so close to us that we can spend some time looking around now, particularly at this time of where we are in the world.
Yeah, I think there is a real lack of appreciation for the depth of history that we have in Australia. You know, people, you go to countries and they boast about how their civilization goes back 6,000 years or 10,000 years, and you think, you know, we've got so much more than that, and we don't really appreciate it for ourselves. For the listeners listening in at the moment, we are recording in a COVID-safe environment. We're all calling in from our respective homes, and Sue is backed by a beautiful Aboriginal dot painting. And there was also an extremely large cat that just went straight past her. So we're a little bit concerned for her safety, but I think you're okay there, aren't you, Sue?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, that's good. Now let's get into some of our regional favourites, the places that we recommend that people go to and that we can explore right now. Sue, we're going to start in New South Wales, which is your area of expertise, and we're going to start in the Blue Mountains. What makes that area special, do you think?
Wow, it's just so beautiful, and it's really not very far from Sydney. It's just a short drive, really. And you've got wonderful walking there. You've got great climbing. You've got fabulous places to stay, some really kind of cozy little boutique places or larger hotels with lots and lots of facilities. There's great restaurants, cafes, the world's steepest railway into the Jameson Valley, and the glass floor cable car going across the mountains, and lots of adventure sports as well. I mean, I think there's so much there, and it's just stunning countryside, amazing landscapes.
You indulged your adventurous spirit there as well, didn't you, with some abseiling?
That's right. I mean, if Fred Brophy, that fight happened on my worst ever birthday, then I was bought for my second worst ever birthday an abseiling trip to the Blue Mountains. And I always thought abseiling looked like huge fun, but in fact, I hated it. And I mean, it was a really spectacular environment in which to try it. And I kind of got, you know, geared up and I did I jumped from a little hill and that was fine. And then I jumped from a bigger hill. And then suddenly we were right on the top of a mountain and we were having to jump down to a little ledge. And it was very beautiful. And if I hadn't have had to jump down, I would have really enjoyed the experience. But, you know, I stood on the side of the mountain and the man told me, now jump, jump. And I'd never had the experience before where your legs just won't move. And he kept shouting at me to jump, but my legs just wouldn't jump. And he kept saying to me, but be careful when you do jump. Don't swing back into the ledge because it'll probably knock all your teeth out. So I got so scared after a while. And finally, I really just made this massive effort and jumped down and kind of got down onto this tiny little slim ledge below. And I thought that was the worst thing I've ever had to do in my life. And the other people on this abseiling trip kept saying to me, you know, I was obviously white with fear. And they were saying, oh, you know, why are you doing this? And I said, oh, it's a birthday present for my partner. And they said, oh, where's your partner? And I said, he wouldn't come with me. He's a long, long way away drinking coffee and eating cake in the Katoomba. Yeah. So, I found it really hard work. I wouldn't necessarily... Yeah, recommend it for everybody. But look, lots of people really love it. And everybody in this trip thought it was fantastic. I think I was the only one who, when they said to me, when I'd crawled up back to the top again, and they said to me, okay, you can go again if you like. I thought, there is no way on earth I would ever do that again. But yeah.
And it is quite incredible, the Blue Mountains, you know, the sort of sheer size and grandness of it, which you don't really realise and it's so close to Sydney. You know, you go up the hill, you drive up there, you get into Katoomba, and it just seems like a normal old place, a normal old town, and then you sort of walk out and finally get to that lookout that looks out over it, and you just realise it's really quite unbelievable that it's even there, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you go to the towns there, they've got some fantastic Art Deco architecture, and they've got every kind of facility you can need. And as you say, you just go a little way outside and it's just wild, really wild. You can't understand why so many people get lost there every year. It's just absolutely fantastic. It's wonderful. It's a great resource for us.
Now moving south a little bit from Sydney, so you've also nominated the south coast of New South Wales, which is places like Jervis Bay and towns like Eden. What is it that you think that people should go there to experience?
Well, I love those towns because they've all got wonderful beaches, real white sand and really beautiful blue waters. They've got fantastic fishing if you're into fishing. They've got you can go and see whales, you can see dolphins, you can see sharks sometimes, hopefully not too close up really. But there's lots of boating. You can just do so much there. And there's also lots of local history in the towns as well. I mean, many of them were built on the old whaling industry, and then they went on to the timber industry, and now many of them make a living from tourism. But it's a beautiful part of Australia. It's really, really special, I think.
And finally, the last place that you've mentioned is Lightning Ridge, which I have to admit I don't really know much about. I don't know where it is. I don't know what people would go there for. Can you describe it for us?
I mean, it's quite a long way to go there. It's near Walgett. It's 720 k's northwest of Sydney, so it can be a bit of a struggle to get there, really. But once you're there, it's like a parallel universe, really. Lots of people went there in the old days for opal mining, and still lots of people just turn up hoping, because with opal mining, you don't have to have a big investment to start mining. So you just basically buy a little claim and then you start digging your hole. So lots of families go over there and stay in caravans and just hope that one day they're going to hit their fortune. And so it's an amazing kind of dreamlike place because there's so many people just hoping that one day they're going to win the lottery there. And some of them live in appalling little shacks, or they camp on their claim because they don't trust anybody else, because somebody else might come and rat on them and kind of find the opal waiting. And it's just a really place full of really eccentric people, but really great fun. I mean, the pubs are really full of people who want to chat to you and tell you the amazing stories, really tall stories sometimes. But it's such a colourful place. It's probably one of the most diverse and interesting places in Australia. And as you go into the town, it says what the official population is. But actually, the real population is probably about four times that, because many of those people are just trying to get lost there. So they don't want anybody to know they're there. So they never register vote or anything. So it's one of those great Australian traditional places where people go to lose themselves or to just find their fortune. I honestly would urge you to go.
It must be a town of eternal optimists as well, you know, people who've gone out there to find their fortune and still believe that they will.
Yeah, and some of them do. You know, you hear some great stories about somebody who just disappears one day and you think, I wonder if he's been murdered because, you know, he's discovered some opal and somebody has tried to kill him. And then you find out, no, he's living overseas in Florida now because he's made his fortune. It's quite incredible. It's an amazing place, really is.
And yeah, right, it sounds it.
Yeah, you go to other big mining towns and they're all big corporate towns and people just, you know, there working on machinery. But places like Lightning Ridge and Cooper Pedy still have that incredible magic because they're just people toiling and just trying to find some money, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. We are going to have to move on, though. We're going to move down to Victoria. We're going to chat to Jane a little bit about that. Now, Jane, you've got a few places that you've mentioned, one of which is a town of Forrest, which once again, I have to admit that I really don't know much about or wasn't even aware of its existence. Can you tell us about Forrest?
It's one of those places. I think, you know, Victoria, of course, we have the Great Ocean Road and Phillip Island, and they are the kind of rock stars of the state, and justifiably so, I guess. But I guess there's some little outliers, and Forrest is one of them. It's quite close to the Great Ocean Road. It's about 30 minutes from Lawn and Apollo Bay and Colac. And it's a tiny, tiny town. It's about 170 people. But what it has is these amazing mountain biking trails. It's 65 kilometres of single track in the Great Otway National Park. But, you know, I'm a bit of a mountain biker, but, you know, not the most adventurous these days, I'd have to say. But you go do your mountain biking, but then you can end up at this wonderful place called the Forrest Brewing Company, which is set in the middle of the town. It's actually a small-scale brewery. Everything's brewed on site. and hand bottled and hand labeled, but it also had this wonderful massive dining hall. So, you know, that's kind of a real hub for the locals, but also for the tourists as well.
I've always fancied finishing off any period of exercise with a couple of beers. So that does sound ideal. And you want to talk about South Gippsland, which is sort of a string of towns, really, isn't it? Can you give us a bit of an orientation and tell us where it is and what it's like?
Yeah, so this is in the other direction from the Great Ocean Road, about I think it's about 130 km from Melbourne in the direction of the southeast. And, you know, along this sort of route towards Wilson's Prom, there's a lovely little town called Lock. And I know I'm harking back to the alcohol, but this is home to this beautiful brewery and distillery. It's set in an old bank building, and they do gin and ales and single malt whiskey. And it's really, you know, it's on this street where there's some fantastic cafes. But the Lock Brewery and Distillery really, you know, they welcome people just to come and have a drink and sit in the front lawn or bring some food from somewhere else. They don't actually do food. It's part of their sort of culture, I suppose, that you know, encouraging business in the area. And then further along is Menin, which is another great little town, and that's got a very popular garlic festival, which is held every year. People take this garlic seriously there. and it's also home to a fantastic southern Italian pizza place called Trulli, which in summer you need to actually book. So it's quite sort of galling, really, that you're in a country town but you need to book. It's like something from Melbourne. But it's fantastic. And then on to Fish Creek, where they have their annual Tea Cozy Festival. So really, really quirky places. And running along these towns is the Gippsland Rail Trail, which is it's now 68 kilometres of pretty flat trail that you can take your bike or people take their horses along. I can say I've ridden this one. It's pretty straightforward and not too challenging. And it goes through dairy farmland. It's just gorgeous and areas of bush and scrub.
What's the accommodation like up there?
Oh, there's fantastic little Airbnbs, but also little lodges that are opening along the way. There's also Fish Creek Pub that you can stay at. So, but you could even just make a day trip of it if you were coming from Melbourne. And I must also mention there's a fantastic cidery called Gurney Cidery, which is on the way. So you can park your bike and stop for a paddle of different ciders.
I'm definitely sensing a theme to your choices here, Jamie. I really enjoy it. I've got to say,
it's all about the food and the drink and getting some fresh air. I've got to say,
I think we're on the same wavelength there. I like it. Now, your next choice is a little bit further afield, up in northeastern Victoria. Which towns are we talking about up there, and what is there to do?
Well, look, I've got to say I'm a big sun person, but this, you know, northeastern Victoria gets pretty chilly, but it's just stunning. It's towns of Bright and Dinner Plain and Mount Beauty. And again, fantastic cycling, touring, accommodation, great food and wine. And I think it's also one of those places that you can spend more than just a day. You know, you can do some cooking schools. There's the Otto Does Otto actually came to the area in the 60s, and he was saying it was traditionally a tobacco growing area, but he actually set up, grew grapes and was producing Prosecco. So it speaks to the area's heritage as well, this food and wine and accommodation.
Right. And I guess by the sounds of it, a strong Italian heritage as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you can go up there and do your gnocchi making workshop. At the moment, you can do a lot of online courses again, which is fantastic. But, you know, there's nothing like the real thing, is there?
As domestic travel restrictions begin to lift in Australia, so too is our desire to finally explore our own backyard. Intrepid has discovered some of the local spots Australians most want to see, like watching the sunset at Uluru, walking the spectacular trails of the Kimberley, and eating our way around Tasmania. Intrepid's itineraries in these local destinations offer experiences and insider access that you just couldn't discover on your own. Visit intrepidtravel.com/Australia to start planning. Now, guys, let's head out a little bit further and check out some of the other states. Sue, you've obviously spent quite a bit of time in Queensland. Take us to Winton. Tell us about Winton. What does it have to offer?
Well, Winton is my very favourite outback town, really. It's kind of got everything that the perfect outback town should have. It's got a big, wide main street, and it's got so many pubs dotted along, one at each end and then all the ones in the middle. And it's got
What are the pubs like up there?
They're a bit rough and ready, but they're incredibly friendly.
Yeah.
And you can sit out on the veranda and have a beer and have some really good food. And the thing is about the outback, when you have a meal, the meals are always massive. Like you kind of look at your plate and think, how many people were going to come and eat this meal with me? But, you know, it's just for one person. But Winton has also a lot of things to see. They've got this great museum, the Walsing Matilda Centre, and that's kind of a love letter to the old swaggies of yore, the swag men who used to roam around. And it's absolutely beautiful. It's got some great kind of exhibitions, and it's got beautiful dioramas and lots and lots of poetry and lots of interactive exhibitions as well. And also out there is the Australian Age of Dinosaurs, where this huge museum to dinosaurs, because there were dinosaurs there, and they have great dinosaur tracks. And they had the first ever dinosaur stampede that's ever been there's evidence still left from. And that's the thing that inspired Steven Spielberg when he was doing Jurassic Park, for those scenes where all the dinosaurs stampeded. It was actually at Winton that he first had the idea and thought, well, that could be a great part of our film. So it's a really interesting place. There's so much to see and do there. But it's kind of really wonderful red dirt and great red escarpments, which are quite towering and beautiful, and lots of old kind of swaggies still around, and lots of old farmers who have been there forever, and they, you know, still got cattle, and yeah, it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. I grew up in regional Queensland, so I do have a soft spot for it. It's a pretty amazing place. And Sue, I know you had a fairly interesting experience around Longreach that stuck with you as well.
Yeah, that's
driving around in your car there. What happened?
Well, that was a good choice of words, stuck with me, because I actually drove over a dead kangaroo. I didn't actually notice it until I was almost on top of it. It was already dead, but immediately I drove over it. This terrible smell in the car just seeped into the car, and I drove around all day, and the smell was just foul. I just couldn't get rid of it. And when I went to check into the motel that night, the guy was really friendly, and he said, oh, where have you been from and how are you going? And I said to him, I ran over a kangaroo and I just don't know what to do. The smell in the car is just disgusting. I don't know how to get rid of it. And he said, oh, just leave your car here. And I thought, I don't know what he's going to do. But I went in, had a shower, came out, and he was under the car scraping off dead bits of kangaroo from the bottom of the car. And I mean, I thought that was just such an amazing thing for him to do. And that, for me, that really kind of summed up outback Queensland, where people can, you know, they're so generous and they're so, you know, keen to help and they're so welcoming. And I mean, I was just a city girl. I didn't know what on earth to do, really. And he just made the car spick and span for me again.
I think in those small towns, you have such a personal experience as well. You know, if you're in a big city and you're checking into a hotel or something, you're just one of thousands who are doing that every day. But when you're in a smaller place like that, you know, you develop a personal connection with people, and you get to a point where, you know, they will offer to do something like that for you. And it makes you appreciate the place a lot more, I think, when you have that interaction with local characters and local people.
Oh, it really does. Because when they say, how do you define the outback? Somebody once said to me, it's a place where the handshake's a little firmer and the smile lingers longer. And I just thought that was really beautiful as well.
It's so important, I think, too, as, you know, for people who are travellers rather than, and, you know, we are all tourists, but that sense of actually interacting with people and actually having a connection rather than that tourist experience where you've paid, for example, for whatever it is, you know, going in to experience something. This is actually real.
And if you live in the city as well, it's so nice to get out of your bubble and you know, see how the rest of Australia operates and see what it's like.
Yes, and I do think we become more suspicious and, you know, these are really interesting times, aren't they? And to actually have someone talk to you without any ulterior motive, just to have a chat is it's quite refreshing, isn't it?
That's right, because whenever I used to come home after being in the outback, I'd walk along the street in King's Cross in Sydney and smile at people, and they'd glare at me as if, you know, what the hell do you want? Yeah. And I'd talk to people on the train, and they'd kind of shrink away from me, and I'd think, oh yes, I'm in the city again now. I forget.
It's like reverse culture shock.
Yeah.
We actually, just to travel overseas for a second, Sue, we had the very same experience in Sri Lanka. We took our son when he was 12 months old, and you know, of course, he was embraced by the local communities over there. And when we came back, he would talk to people, yell, you know, wave at them and say hi. And the rest of the world just ignored him. And I thought,
oh,
wow,
no.
That's quite a shock, isn't it? We're back home.
Now, Jane, moving along, you've also spent a bit of time in Queensland as well. And Mossman Gorge was a place that you nominated as somewhere that people should go to. What is it about that you think people should check out?
Oh, absolutely. We took our kids there, and, you know, Mossman Gorge is stunning, beautiful waterfalls and waterholes that you can explore. But at the centre itself, you can actually do a tour, and it's called the Dreamtime Gorge Walk, and you have Indigenous guides, which, again, is really... It's something we were travelling with our kids who were, you know, getting to that teenage of having a bit of attitude and, you know, unimpressed basically by everything in the world. But this guide took us around and, you know, showing us sort of bush medicine, telling his stories. It was, you know, the most amazing few hours that we spent together. He, you know, made us food, did a smoking ceremony again, which is such a revelation for city kids and for adults as well. So, and it's a stunning part of the world, warm, beautiful, and so different, so other to, you know, the southern states, I guess.
Yeah, right. And I guess, you know, also in the Northern Territory, there's a lot of opportunity for those Indigenous tourism experiences that you know, some Australians don't make enough time to really get to explore. I know I spent some time in Nipmuluk National Park near Katherine, and they've got some amazing experiences there where you go out with some of the local guys on a boat, and it's just, you know, it's a discussion of culture and stories and you know, what the country means to local people there. And it's an amazing thing to learn. It's such a beautiful experience.
Yeah, and that's really about the essence of the joy of travel, isn't it? That sense that we have got so much to learn, and particularly in our own backyard. It's just enlightening, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Now, Sue, what about in Western Australia? Ningaloo Reef, that whole area around there is quite incredible. It's so untouched and remote and so beautiful.
Oh, it's absolutely stunning. And, of course, you can go swimming with whale sharks there, which is a great thing to be able to do. I really enjoyed
it. Sue, what haven't you done in Australia?
I'm sure there's lots of things. It's just endless.
But Sue, how does the Ningaloo experience compare to say, the Great Barrier Reef?
Well, it's very different, because the Great Barrier Reef, everything is organised for you, really. You're on one of those great boats going out there, and you know, you've got your own locker, you've got the guys put the gear on you to go out snorkeling or to go out diving, and everything's really well organized. Whereas over at Ningaloo Reef, it's a lot wilder, it's a lot rawer, because I mean, it's such a remote place, there's a far fewer travelers go there, but it's still really surprisingly well organized. Say going out looking with the whale sharks, you go out in a boat, a little boat, and the guys have got there's a spotter plane goes overhead to try and find the whale sharks, and then they talk on the phone to the guy who's in charge of the boat. So he will say, okay, suddenly they've seen one, and then you just motor to a place and you all jump in the water, and then hopefully the whale sharks will come up to you and you'll see them. But on the way back from one, I was in the plane and I was sitting next to a guy who had used to be a whale shark spotter. He used to fly one of the spotter planes. And he said he's never done it since. He told the boat to go because there was a group of whale sharks, and it turned out that they were great white sharks. and he had told them that it was white whale shark. So everybody had dived in from the boat, and he suddenly realised, no, that shape is not a whale shark. And he sent an SOS back down to them saying, get back in the boat. And he said that's the last time he ever did it. He never did it. And I thought that was really good that I heard about that when I came away from the place rather than going into the place. But I think things like that are quite rare, really.
I think they are, but I think it's a good story in that it does sort of demonstrate, you know, Australia is big and broad and wild and rugged and amazing, but, you know, it does have its dangers. It does have its sort of moments where you kind of think to yourself, what have I actually got myself into here as well, doesn't it?
Sure. You can't underestimate the dangers sometimes. I mean, I went and did the Larapinta Trek, and I met an Irish backpacker who had been doing the trek, and he was just sitting with his backpack in tears. He'd run out of water, and there was a bush mouse plague, and they had bitten their way into his rucksack and chewed his water bottles, and he had no water left. And he was just really badly organized. He was just doing it on his own, and I think he completely misread how wild the Larapinta Trek would be and how remote it would be. I mean, I think he thought there would be kind of hotels and there would be cafes and pit stops where you could buy food to eat. But, you know, it's nothing like that at all. And I think that's a real danger for foreigners. And sometimes for us Australians, we don't realise how wild and difficult Australia can be.
I think even for Australians, you know, we always sort of laugh at the foreigners who come in here. My cousin came to visit us when we were living in Gladstone in central Queensland and said he wanted to borrow the car to drive up to Cairns for the weekend. We always sort of laugh at that. But yeah, I mean, Australians tend to underestimate the dangers and the breadth of experience there is in Australia as well, and all the amazing things that there are to do here. We won't always know about, which hopefully now we do know a little bit more about. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. There's so many more places that we were going to cover today, I think, or we wanted to cover, which in itself is instructive of just how much there is in Australia to talk about and there is to do. You know, I wanted to talk about Margaret River and some of the other places in WA. We were going to talk about Kangaroo Island and Clare Valley and Adelaide Hills. And we haven't even been to Tasmania. Jane was going to tell us all about Tasmania.
Next time.
we are running out of time, sadly. But yeah, I think, you know, certainly, as I was saying, the lesson really here is that there is so much to do in Australia, even within driving distance of where we all live. It's a pretty exciting thing to have that opportunity now to get out there and check it out. Guys, to finish off, I've got one final question for you. And that is, you know, you've both seen so much of Australia already, regional Australia. What is on your bucket list for 2020? What is the place that you want to go and check out in these times of sort of isolation from the rest of the world? What are you going to go and see? Jane, do you want to go first?
Well, I was actually going to say Ningaloo Reef, but maybe not so.
No, do go.
No, I'm still keen to get there. Look, I'd really like to explore around Broome and up around those areas. That's on my wish list.
Yep. Okay, great. And Sue, what about you?
The place I've never been to, which I would really love to go to, is Mungo National Park. It's got such amazing landscape. You've got real history there as well. And it's quite a difficult place to get to. But there's lots of Indigenous guys there who will talk to you about the place and show you around. So I really, really want to go there. It looks incredibly magical. It looks quite special. A place that there's no parallel anywhere else in the world. So I must go there very soon. And it's great that we've got the motivation now to go to these places.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, the trip I really want to do that I've wanted to do for a long time is the drive from Perth around the corner to Esperance in the sort of southeast of Western Australia. Really keen to check out some of those beachy towns along the way. And you know, it takes you through forest. It takes you along coastline. And it just looks incredible. So that's an experience that, you know, I hope to have this year.
Great. And maybe go end up with Lightning Ridge.
Absolutely. That is for sure. Jane and Sue, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
And if you would like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. Don't forget to rate and review if you've been enjoying it. And you can dig into the archives and find plenty of episodes back there covering a whole range of topics. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we're on Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Flight of Fancy that you can join. And of course, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy. Thanks for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Intrepid Travel. Sign up to the Intrepid e-newsletter for more travel inspiration and to be the first to hear about great deals and competitions. Visit intrepidtravel.com to subscribe today.
Fly a Fancy is hosted by Ben Groundwater. This podcast is produced by me, Annie Dang. Audio production by LapFam. And our digital editor at traveller.com.au is Craig Platt.